Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Talking Football Podcast. My name's Derek Clark, and each week I bring you an exclusive in-depth interview with some of the most colourful and interesting characters in the game. Don't worry if you've missed any so far, you can listen to them back on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and also by visiting derekclarksport.co.uk. This week, I had the pleasure of chatting to a former Canadian international midfielder who's probably best known for his time at St Johnstone. It is, of course, the one and only Nick Dazovic. It's another cracking interview where we hear how Nick played alongside the likes of Zvonimir Boban and even had to flee the War of Independence in Croatia. He also chats in depth about his time in Scotland and what he's up to now at his hometown club, the Vancouver Whitecaps. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode of the Talking Football Podcast. Welcome everyone to another edition of the Talking Football Podcast. I'm delighted to say we're joined this week by a former Canadian internationalist and a man that I'm sure St Johnstone fans will love to hear. It's of course Nick Dazovic. Nick, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic career in the game, of course. When you were born 1968 in Vancouver, were you always playing football or soccer as a young boy?
Soccer and, you know, here obviously the sport's hockey, but I never got to put the skates on. But I did play basketball and baseball. So, you know, kind of three sports. We did that back in the old days. We played whatever sport was kind of in that time frame. And then where now it seems like everybody now is doing specializing really early, right? But yeah, back in the day, we played everything we could.
Yeah. Did you have any sort of role models growing up? Any players that you admired?
Yeah, I grew up here watching the team I'm actually working for now, which is the Vancouver Whitecaps. So, I mean, probably one of the best players I watch play here. There's a few, like Bruce Grobler was, you know, he played for the Whitecaps, and Peter Beardsley played here. But I think the one that I remember the most and was only here for a season, I think, was Ruud Krol. The Dutch international, played at Napoli after, just an incredible player. So it was good to watch some really talented players come through in Vancouver. And not just Vancouver, watching teams like the Cosmos with your stars like, you know, Beckenbauer and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of big players. Johan Cruyff was playing here. So it's a lot of big players that would play in North America. So you got to see a lot of them.
I mean, I'd imagine when Canada made the World Cup in 86, was that something that sort of inspired you as well, watching them playing in the sort of world stage?
Yeah, I was with the youth team at the time, the Canadian national youth team. Not very often, but I was with their setup, so I got to be around that group that did make the World Cup. So yeah, it was an exciting time, and I ended up playing with some of those players later on, you know, in the senior team. So yeah, it was a big time, and we thought it was a time where we were going to kick on and make a lot more World Cups, but unfortunately that was the one and only we've been to.
We've known you as a sort of midfielder, Nick. Did you always play in midfield, or did you play a sort of variety of positions?
Yeah, I mean, particularly with the national team, I played, it seemed, almost every position barring a striker or a goalkeeper. But when I played in Europe, when I played in Croatia for Dinamo Zagreb, it was more of a centre-back, kind of more defensive role. And then when I got to Scotland or, you know, France, Sweden, I ended up playing a little bit more higher up the pitch in that central midfield area, but still more of a defensive orientation. But yeah, never, as I'm sure the St. John's supporters know, I've never really been one for scoring goals. So,
funny you should mention Dinamo Zagreb. How did that move all come about to go over there?
It was a point in my life where I was, I think, 18 at the time, and I had a few opportunities to try out to play pro football in Canada, and they had a new league, and I wasn't getting a chance to go. I was a young player, so it was a difficult time for coaches to trust an 18-year-old or even give them a chance. So through my dad's contacts and that, I ended up, actually through my mom's contacts, I ended up going back to Croatia. Sending a letter. Back in the day, it wasn't emails or phone calls, basically, and that I was interested in coming across. And the funny part is, when I went there, they actually thought I was there as a supporter, just to get some pictures taken and, you know, get a scarf. And so it was really a strange, I remember meeting with the second team coach then, and my mom was kind of looking really dazed, and I didn't speak Croatian at the time. So, and then I kind of asked her quietly, what's going on? Is like, they think you just come here to kind of hang out with a team and take some photos. So that was my start. So like, I had to go the next day to training and kind of prove myself. So that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah, and I mean, you said that not knowing the language, how difficult was it to sort of integrate yourself in the team and the way of life over there?
Because I grew up in a Croatian home in Vancouver and my parents spoke, I didn't speak English till I was 6 years old in Canada because I was all in Croatian language.
Wow.
So whatever I lost, I got back very quickly. So within 6 months, I was basically fluent, you know, and then ended up spending 4 years there. So, I got my documentation, became a proper citizen, all the rest of it. So, and then unfortunately in 91, when I left, the reason why I did leave was because, you know, the country, they went to war. So, ended up leaving the country in 91 and that was it.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I mean, of course, it was all kicking off the War of Independence and stuff like that. Did you leave just in time, or did you have to sort of hang about there a little bit when it was all going on?
Yeah, it was I got there and I think it was 88, but like you could feel the tension from starting then, you know, there was a definite tension. And then what really, was a straw that broke the camel's back was the game that we had at home against Red Star when the famous Zvonimir Boban, our captain, kicked the police officer. That was, he hit one of my other teammates and Boban tried to protect him and et cetera. And anyway, he kicked the police officer, which in fact ended up suspending Boban for, I think, 6 months. He'd missed the 1990 World Cup because of it. So that was kind of the start of what was going to happen, you know, less than a year later. So, but you feel the tension, and what basically happened was near the end of, well, the king embassy at the time, the king consulate basically said, you know, you need to leave and you leave. And what happened at the end of the day was I didn't leave. And then finally the embassy says, look, you need to leave now because it's just getting too tight. So anyway, when I left within a week's time, they closed the borders down and all the rest, and it was getting right into the kind of a full-scale war. So scary moments, and you know, it was a difficult time because, you know, all my buddies were there and family members, and you leave right when time is tough. But I wasn't someone that was prepared to fight. I guess if I want to say, most of my buddies had to do the army. It was a prereq. You had to do it. It was mandatory for a year. So they all had training and everything. So for me, it was a no-brainer to get out and go home and try to figure something else out. Very scary time, actually. Really scary.
Yeah, it certainly would have been. You mentioned there Zvonimir Boban. I mean, what a player he was. What was it like to sort of play alongside these guys? Was Davor Šuker there as well at that time?
Yeah, Davor Šuker. It was Boban. I went there, I played third division, and then so Dinamo sent me on loan, came back to play with the first team. And when you talk about quality of players, they're at a different level. And it showed. I mean, Boban went on and played for AC Milan, and Davor Šuker ends up playing for, you know, Real Madrid, et cetera. So, but the one thing about Boban I remember is he was, you know, kind of the first guy at training and the last guy to leave. And he worked so hard to master his game. Where Davor Šuker was just, he didn't really work. He was just so natural. He could score a goal from anywhere. So, but you know, good people, good guys. And it was definitely learned a lot from those guys being in the environment around them for sure.
Did anyone sort of help you settle in there, Nick? Did they sort of give you a wee bit of advice and that sort of thing when you were there?
Not so much at Dinamo, because when I got to Dinamo, I was there on trial. So I was with the second team, basically, for about, I think it was a period of 3 months. And then after the 3 months, it was basically, look, do you want to stick around and try to figure this out? You can go play third division. So that was my step to try to go down to get up. And so I ended up playing in a small, really small club where I think that's where I gonna. It was a wise decision for me at the time, because you go to a bigger club as a younger player, you get lost a little bit. Where if you go to a small club in a small town, people take care of you, and if you do well, they appreciate it. And it's a great way to get minutes on the pitch and to prove yourself. Where a lot of kids, you know, if you had a decision between, you know, I don't know, if you had a decision between, let's say, a Celtic or Rangers or a smaller club, a lot of guys would want to go to Rangers or Celtic at a young age, and sometimes it's better off going to a smaller club to get your minutes and get your affirmation, and that's kind of what I decided, and it was the best decision for me at that time.
Yeah, you had a spell at North York Rockets, is that right? And you played in the Canadian Soccer League?
if you want to talk about every club I played for, this is going to be a 2-hour. that was kind of the start of my that's when I came back from Dinamo Zagreb from Croatia. I came back and then ended up playing for a Toronto-based team, actually called North York Rockets. They were part of a Canadian soccer league that went under in 1992 when I got home. So I had played 2 years in that league with that team, and then basically the league folded, and then there's a new league called the American Professional Soccer League started, which was called the APSL, where I played for the Impact, Montreal Impact, who we had actually won the championship. And this was prior to the MLS. So it was a really good league, actually, the APSL. But yeah, so North York Rockets was a 2-year stint, you know, summer months, and in between the two summer seasons, one of them I actually ended up trying my hand at trying to become a drummer with a bunch of guys in a band. So I tried that, didn't work. that was that stint. But it's almost like you just had to keep your feet moving there and find jobs. That's what it was like back then.
You played, of course, for the likes of Montreal Impact, like you say, Vancouver 86ers, which is now the Vancouver Whitecaps. I guess back then, is football changed massively, soccer, compared to what it was when you played back then?
Yeah, I mean, when I grew up watching, has it changed drastically? I don't know if it has drastically, because we had an incredible NASL league with, you know, like we said, the Cosmos and the Tampa Bay Rowdies and Whitecaps, Toronto Blizzard, you know, LA Aztecs are called, with guys like Johan Cruyff. But then, yeah, when I started to play, from where I've come to where the league is now, it's not even close. It's gone mental. And if you look at, like, yesterday, was it yesterday, day before yesterday, you had the LA Galaxy play the LAFC team in MLS playoffs, and you know, stadium, and Zlatan's playing, and it's gone to a different level. You look at our team, Vancouver Whitecaps, we're averaging, you know, 19,000-20,000 a game. Seattle Sounders, they're averaging 38,000-39,000 a game. So they're getting crowds, they're getting interest. It's mainstream here. It really is, which is great to see. And it's only going to get bigger. They just announced a new team in the MLS, Sacramento. They're ready to put in 2 or 3 more, and it's crazy. It's really gone nuts here.
92, you made your debut, of course, for your country. I was reading it was against China, is that right, in a friendly? I guess you must have been immensely proud to pull on that Canadian jersey.
Yeah, it's I guess at the time it's your first cap, and it was a friendly, and it was in a small little area in Canada, which was on the island just off of Vancouver, just here off of Vancouver. It was called Vancouver Island, Victoria. I think it was Nanaimo actually played the one game as well, but it was a big moment when you get to do that. And the other thing is, I remember that game because it was a game where we used a lot of domestic-based players because the European guys were, obviously playing out in their way, and there wasn't an international break at the time. So it gave me an opportunity to showcase myself in front of the coach there, and ended up playing, you know, for, I think, if I'm not mistaken, about 12 years or something, or whatever it was. So yeah, it was a proud moment though, for sure.
Yeah, touching on it, I mean, you did play for it quite a number of times, 63 caps, I think you picked up. What was the sort of highlight of your international career, Nick?
We never made the World Cup, so that's not a highlight for sure. But it's funny because we actually won the Gold Cup in 2000, which I didn't actually play in because I hurt my ankle at St. Johnstone, so I missed that whole episode. But because of winning the Gold Cup, which is basically kind of like winning the European Championships for our area, we ended up playing in the Confederations Cup in Japan and in Korea in 2002. So got to play against, you know, Brazil and Cameroon and Japan, yeah. Kind of. So that was kind of our World Cup if for our generation, because it was the best we could do. But and I know it's kind of cliche, but, you know, the reality is anytime kind of you put on the shirt, it was a proud moment. But I remember we played Brazil, the Brazil team that ended up winning the 94 World Cup. We ended up playing them in a friendly in Canada just before the World Cup and tying them 1-1. So that was a big event for us, you know, playing against a team that would become the world champions. And, you know, they had a completely stacked team. So those kind of games were fun to play in.
Yeah, certainly. Did you pick up any jerseys along the way when you were playing for the national team at all?
Well, that game particularly, that Brazil game, they were so pissed that we beat, that we tied them 1-1. They're really, like, I think on the next day in the paper in Brazil, it said Black Sunday, you know, for the country, tying a country like Canada. So I can remember that I went to go try to get a change of shirt, and it was a player, I think, Machio Santos, who was, I think, at the time playing for Fiorentina, and he wouldn't change the shirt with me. So I literally kind of hockey grabbed him and pulled it off of him. And as I pulled his off, I just grabbed mine and threw it at him and ran off. And there's a good picture after the game of us kind of celebrating a 1-1 draw with Brazil. And there's only three guys that have jerseys. The one guy that got the jersey was from Tafarel, the goalkeeper. And that guy scored on Tafarel to tie the game. And he actually approached that. Tafarel approached one of my teammates and said, "Here, take this jersey as a moment, because you'll never score against Brazil for the rest of your life." It was a kind of a nice moment for me, but no one else wanted to change jerseys, which was understandable, but some of us had to figure a way to get one, and I did.
Well done. The Canadian team just now seem to be on a sort of upward trend. I mean, they beat the USA recently, didn't they, for the first time, and it seems like an age. So things, how are things looking for the national team just now?
Yeah, really, really positive. We have a younger generation of players. What we have now that we haven't had in a long time is we have a team full of dynamic, fast, aggressive, kind of forward-thinking players, which is good. And it's exciting to watch. We obviously had a young boy that played here at the club I'm at, Alfonso Davies, that was sold to Bayern Munich, that's playing. And Scott Arfield is actually at Rangers, that is playing with us. So it's, there's a lot of young and a good mix of a few older talented players. But yeah, it's a bright time right now for Canada. It's been a long time waiting. We have our U17 team competing today, actually. Game one against Brazil in the World U17 World Cup. Haven't qualified for the Youth World Cup in a while. So there's a starting turn. The corner's starting to turn. I think it's to do with a lot of the academies, you know, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver academies that are producing these young kids. And then a lot of them are going actually abroad and getting their experiences in European countries, which has helped massively as well.
Yeah, and of course the World Cup's coming to Canada in 2026. Is there a sort of great sense of excitement in the country around that sort of tournament?
Yeah, I think there was initially, because, you know, but then the reality is it's still kind of far away. So
yeah,
people are still kind of I think the biggest part is now just the process of the games coming up now for you know, the possibility of going to the 2022 World Cup. Because right now people were only saying, well, we're going to make the World Cup because we're hosting it. But now there's a legitimate chance that we can make the 2022 World Cup. So that's a new excitement for the Canadian fans. You know, obviously the Americans and the Mexicans are going to, we're only going to get 10 games, I think, out of 60. So it won't be, and I don't foresee us getting any really huge games, I don't think, in Canada. But it's, you know, it's a moment where people are now getting behind this team because of what they've done over the last 6 months.
Yeah, and then back to the club matters, Nick. Of course, you enjoyed a couple of spells in France and Sweden with two clubs before you joined St Johnstone. How did the St Johnstone move all come about?
Yeah, I was playing in Sweden at a club called Trelleborg, down south, close to Malmo, and I was. And the guy, that it's really funny, because back in the, I was playing with the 86ers. So in the summer of, I think that was 95. And I just got back from France playing in San, and we just won the league in France. And I left, ended up going home. Then I went to play with Vancouver 86ers for, I think it was, I don't know how many games, probably 5 to 10 games. But I was in New York City playing, resting in the hotel, and I got a fax, because back in the day, again, we had no, that's how we got stuff done back in the day. And I got a fax from, and it just said, "Do you want to play in Sweden?" That was it. you know, now in this day and age, you'd think it'd be a piss take. But, you know, in that time, it's like, do you want, so I ended up getting the phone number, calling the guy back, and he says, "Look, there's a club here interested in having a look at you. They heard of you, blah, blah, blah." So I ended up literally blindly just, you know, "Here's what we're offering you." And I just sat on a plane and went. And it was, that's what you did back in the day. Again, you didn't, no real agents and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up going there and playing in Sweden. Well, that agent that got me there, I don't know how he knew him, but he knew Paul Sturrock or knew of him or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Well, Paul Sturrock does a lot of traveling. He did anyway to the west coast of Canada, because he loves Vancouver Island, Paul Sturrock. his family. He's taken his family there many times. He'd come across here. So he ended up coming across and watching a game back in the day, which was Montreal Impact against Vancouver 86ers, where I was playing, and ended up scoring that game. And I guess I had a decent game. So when my name came up, he knew of me. And he said, basically, that guy said, look, Paul, I'd love to have a look at you. Would you want to come on trial quick and see if you can, if you want to stick around. So that's how it kind of came about. So after the Swedish season, I went to, it was in November, I guess, I went to a trial game against Hearts. Did well enough for Paul to say, here, we want to offer you a 2-year deal or whatever it was. So that's how it happened.
Wow. And what was Paul Sturrock like to play under as a manager?
Yeah, Paul still today is one of the best ever coaches tactically that I've had that understood, you know, I always said if you gave Paul Sturrock any team and gave him a week to prepare, he'd give you a chance. Doesn't mean he'd win, but he'd give you a chance. And I liked him, and I liked Paul a lot. I thought, you know, some guys maybe didn't quite because he was could be a little bit, I don't want to say aggressive, but, you know, a little bit loud. But that stuff didn't bother me. You know, I enjoyed work. I enjoyed playing for him. I thought he did a tremendous job with the club at the time. You know, I think when I got there, we had won 10 games in a row. So 30 points in 10 games. And it was basically our season. We basically won we basically won promotion in February that year, I think, or something. Or
yeah,
it was an early promotion, pretty much. I mean, I remember telling him once, I don't know how many points ahead, we've won this, and he kind of got pissed, like, not yet, don't say anything till we win it. So but no, he was a good manager, understood the game, and obviously did some good things after, you know, got to Dundee United, went to Southampton and Plymouth, yeah. Got teams promoted. So he had a good run at it too. And it's funny, his son's out here living in Victoria coaching youth football. So carrying on his dad's footsteps, I guess. But it was, but it's funny part, in 1995, I actually played for four different clubs in four different countries.
Wow.
That's how much I had to move. So in the January to May, I was in France. From basically May to kind of June-ish or something, I was in Canada playing. July to September or November in Sweden, and November to December, and then onwards to St. Johnston. So it was a year full of travel.
Yeah, I mean, you spent a good 6 years at St. Johnston, so I guess it's somewhere that you, I guess, finally, in your footballing sense, you could call home.
It was, yeah, it was a place when I first got there. I didn't know what to expect, how long I'd be there, but you know, 6 years was a good run. It's easily the most enjoyable time of my career because of what you said. After all that travel, figure stuff out, to get to sit somewhere and call somewhere home, it was good, you know. And we settled down there, me and my wife, you know, and you know, we ended up actually having a kid there, so we got a bit of Scottish blood running in our house, which is nice. It was. When I look back, it was the fondest time just being a part of a football club. And we always said it was kind of a family, and it was, you know, anybody that played there and understood the dynamics, and it was smaller club, you know, smaller fan base. But if you look back, we had some really decent crowds when we played there. We had some good footballers come through the doors there. And it was an exciting time to be part of that football club.
Yeah, how did you find Scottish football when you first arrived? Did it take you a bit of time to get used to?
I got a sore neck from watching a football fly on my head over there. No, you know what? It was the big difference was, like, when we look at the way that, let's say, that we played and a lot of teams played. You know, I won't put Celtic and Rangers in that threshold because they were on a different level at the time. Although we had some good results against them, they were just always going to win the league at those years. But it was the pace of the game that you needed to get up to speed to very quickly, you know, and even if you're playing the football on the ground or in the air, it was going quick. And that was, you know, I remember Paul saying to me, look, you're going to get one touch. And if you get a second touch, jump when you get the second touch, cause it's coming. So basically it was aggressive, and you learned how to play quick. And once you learn how to play quick and follow that, you were fine. But it was the thing I liked too is whatever kind of happened on the pitch, and you always had to go in a tussle. You know, there was always that feeling of respect towards teammates and or players you played against, where, you know, once you cross the white line back, it was a high five and let's, you know, see you in the lounge for a pint kind of thing. So it was just that respect was great. Being and they had that in Scottish football. You know, they didn't have that issue of, you know, guys diving and all that cheating. It was a real honest man's game.
Yeah, 1998, of course, you played in a League Cup final against Rangers, narrowly losing by 2-1. But, of course, you scored and were named man of the match in that game as well. What's your memories of that game?
Yeah, I think one was, I think just, I don't know how many days or weeks or whatever it was prior to that game, we had lost 7-0 to them. So, at home in McDermott Park. And then we meeting him, I think, whatever it was, a month later or something, we meet him in the cup final. And I think Stefan Givash scored after like 6 minutes. And we all went, oh, shoot, here we go again. and then I scored the equalizer like literally a minute later. So that was a big moment for the club to change right away that kind of momentum. So it was good. It was a good game. I thought, I mean, they had a stacked team and they were, you know, very, very strong team. I still thought that we kind of went into that game a little bit apprehensive, as you would when you get your, you know, backside kick 7-0. So, but yeah, it was a fun day out. It was a fun build up for the city. You know, everything was draped in blue and white, so it was a cool kind of little atmosphere to be in. The city was buzzing. But yeah, I remember getting the Man of the Match award too, and it was one of those ones where they kind of just walked on the line, threw me the plate. Here you go, son. Well done, and walked away. There's no fanfare to it, so we had a good laugh at that. But yeah, it was a really, we were so disappointed at a time for for ourselves in that locker room. We were really disappointed for the supporters that we looked up, and I think there might have been 11,000 of them, if I'm not mistaken. So to have that many supporters from a town that was, you know, at that time probably, I don't know, 60,000, 70,000 maximum, the population was something incredible. But nevertheless, people still enjoyed their day, and but you know, I guess it wasn't until a few years ago they actually got to celebrate a cup. So it's been a long time coming for them.
Yeah, it certainly has. You finished third that season. It was a tremendous season for St Johnstone. What was so special about that team and that dressing room?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, and we just had a reunion. I think it was last year, I guess, or this year. It was a reunion, and I actually ended up going out there because I was in England. I was going to be heading to England for 10 days, so I decided to come up early and be part of a Hall of Fame induction for a few of the players. They're honoring our team, but I went there, and they had guys like, you know, Paul Kane and Roddy Grant and Nathan Lowndes, Miguel Samal, and you know, the list goes on. And it was John O'Neill and Paddy Conley and Darren Dodds. I'm trying to think who else was there, but it was a bunch of guys, and it's still probably, you know, although I played for some talented teams like with Dinamo Zagreb, part of it, that was one of the best ever groups of guys I ever worked with or played with. So to see those guys and be around them was special. But during the time with them, it was just, there were no egos, and it was a comedy fest every day. You know, Alan Preston was part of the team, and he was like a stand-up comedian, and it was a place you wanted to be at on a morning. You wanted to be part of it. You wanted to go to work. You wanted to play for the team. You know, we were never the biggest team, but we would get between 5,000 and 10,000 every game. We want to call them a smaller game, but we're still getting decent crowds. People were engaged in the city and in the team, and it was a special time.
You played in Europe as well with St Johnstone. I mean, you played in an absolutely ridiculous game against Monaco. I was doing a bit of research before calling you. I mean, you scored in that game at McDermott Park. But look, some of the players that Monaco had in that year was unbelievable. Dado Purser scored, but had Trezeguet, Juli, Gallardo, Risa, Sagnol, Barthez was in goals. What was it like to play in that game?
Yeah, it was good. Again, I think I missed a game in Monaco. I was there, but I was sick. I didn't actually even dress. But then, you know, 3-0 down there, coming back home, it's one of those where it's like, let's go enjoy it. We're most likely out. Let something crazy happen. So, we ended up, the funny part is we actually could have been up two or three goals early in that game. We had chances. And then, remember the goal I got against Barthez again. So you score against the World Cup winner, which was kind of cool. But it was a moment where you can see some big guys up front and people, you know, playing against guys like a guy like Diego Simeone, who was part of AC Milan and Italy and everything.
Yeah, some player.
It was pretty cool. I remember that game because after the game, you know, guys were swapping shirts and Nathan Lowndes got Diego Simeone's shirt. And I remember after the game, we tied 3-3. So it was a kind of a, you know, it was a good day. And we came out there, and all of a sudden the door knocks, and Diego Simeone walks in and asks for Nathan and asks Nathan to sign his jersey.
No way.
It allows it. I'm going to retire now. It's over. I can't get any better than this. So it was a good moment for Nathan Lowndes anyway.
Wow, that's incredible. You scored, of course, at a famous win at Parkhead against Celtic. How can you remember much about that game?
I remember if they had a possession stat, it was probably 90-10 for Celtic. I think Alan Main made about 30 saves that game. But yeah, I can remember scoring a goal off a free kick. Keynes put it across, and I just hit it. I hit it with my left, which I'm not normally left-footed, but I hit it with my left. But I can remember it kind of veering away, but I don't know if somebody got a touch on it. I think it might have been Burley or somebody. He just got their head on it and changed directions a little bit to throw the keeper off. But someone was saying they might do an own goal. I said, do not take that one away from me. So it was, again, I think that was the first time that we had beat Celtic at Parkhead as a football club in 20-odd years or 30 years. So that was a big game, a big moment for the club and the people. So, you know, that it was funny because I think that's just when Sandy Clark took over, if I'm not mistaken. It was like maybe game two or game three, or because we had beat Hibs, I think, on his first game in a cup game. And then, you know, it just, I think the difference, you asked about Paul Sturrock was, again, one of the best managers I've played for. But Sandy Clark was a terrific manager as well, but a little different. You know, he had more of this, wanted to build more of a camaraderie, more of a group of guys. And, you know, if things didn't go right, you know, the answers were, let's get together, let's go for a pint, let's talk it out. And just a different coaching style, and everybody's got that. I think Sandy coming in after Paul setting up that team the way he did, it was a move that worked out for everybody. You know, Paul went to the club that he was in his boyhood club of Dundee United, and we got a manager, which was a really, I'm not going to say easygoing, but just, you know, you can call it a player's manager or whatever if you want, for lack of a better word, but it was the right timing for him. And he came in, he kept things loose, kept things enjoyable still. And we kicked on, we really did. And we finished third because we were good. That's without being arrogant. We had a good team and played good football. And like I said, it was a good time for us in that football club.
Yeah, it certainly was. When the time came that you left St Johnstone in 2002, were you disappointed to leave, Nick, or did you feel that the time was right to move back to your homeland?
You know, it was probably, the reality is probably the worst moments of my football career, because we got relegated. So I started the football club from Division 1, and we moved up at that time, was Division 1 as opposed to or whatever we want to call it, second division. And then we got promoted, and then we took them down at the end. So it's kind of like went full circle. So it wasn't meant to be that way. But, you know, I think the biggest, that was probably my biggest disappointment. Without a doubt, in my football career is, you know, you didn't make World Cup, but that to me was the one that will always stick around, that brought the team down, which is, it wasn't a good time. You know, I would have loved to have stayed talked to at the time Billy Stark, but, you know, they're trying to reorganize their team, the finances and everything. So it makes sense. It was time to go. I would have loved to stay another year or two somewhere, but decided to head back to Canada. But like I said, it was a time where, you know, I think as a club, I think we aged. We got too many of us ended up being 30 plus at the same time in that football team. And we didn't quite regenerate the team, I don't think, well enough that to give us a chance to continue to move the team in the right direction. And, you know, that was that's, I guess, the biggest downfall for us, was we didn't continue to grow that club in the right way.
Yeah. And when you were playing in Scotland, was there any sort of player that you came up against that you knew you were in for a game that afternoon?
Yeah, I think the biggest, you know, I was very fortunate in my career to play for Canada, you know, that many times against some really quality teams like Brazil, which had Bebeto's, Vrai, Zunga, Mazinho, you name it, they were there. You know, Holland, German teams, etc. But I think one of the best players I ever played against was probably Gascoigne.
Yeah.
And the most difficult was probably Gascoigne. You know, ended up being, you know, didn't really play quite up against Lars. He's a little bit further away from me, but Gazza was in that midfield area, and he's someone that is just, you know, I don't know what level of where he was at his career at the time when he played for Rangers, but I'll tell you what, he could still play football. And he was one of the toughest men to mark One, he was so active. Two, he's a bit of a nut job on the pitch. You know, he'd smile at you, wink at you, and then you'd feel his studs in the back of your ribs, you know. So he was one of those type of guys. But quality wise, he was phenomenal. It really was. And it's good that I saw that he was back at Ibrox for the day, you know, having a wave for the fans. So it's good to see him, you know, looking like he is and kind of back to Gaza. So it's good to see him there.
Yeah. When the time came that you hung up your boots at Vancouver, was it a good 3 years that you spent there to dwindle down your playing career?
Yeah, it was the reason, you know, came back and ended up playing for the team here. They, at that time, they were going through a massive issue because they had no ownership. The league took them over. They were, you know, down and out. They had no money. So I came back basically played for, you know, next to nothing just to get back in the community and help the football club. So it was a good time to get myself back in, knowing that hopefully one day I can be back in a coaching position maybe, or, you know, something of that aspect. But it was, plus I got to coach, I started to coach a Canadian national youth teams as an assistant coach. So it was a good time. The league was not so much growing, but there was, the MLS was already there. So that was their big kind of focus, was to one day go MLS. So yeah, it was good. It was good to get back in playing. And it got to a point where I got to be 35. I think I still could have played till 40, but when you're taking I look at the bench and there's a 19-year-old kid's waiting to play and I'm, you know, old man. So that's what I decided, just to say, look, it's enough. I'm going to step away and get more into the coaching. And then, you know, the coaching turned into coaching. Then it turned into a 5-year TV thing. So it's been, you know, ever since I came back, it's been active for, since 2002. It's been an active time for me, for sure. Hasn't slowed down.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you always want to be a coach even when you were playing? Were you sort of, did you know that was the path you're going to take?
No, I didn't want to do anything. I had no desire to go into coaching whatsoever, zero. Which was really funny because I did my licenses in Scotland, you know, all my B's and my A's, and then ended up actually finishing my pro license. So at the end of it, but excuse me, that came through moments of being in the license courses and learning about the game and then figuring out and seeing what type of dynamics it was and going, you know, actually I do enjoy this. But you know, when I was playing at St. Johnstone, the last thing I wanted to do was be a coach. But as it grew, I got to enjoy it more and more. And you know, the thing that I like to do is when I got into coaching, I was coaching a lot of young players. And that to me was a really interesting moment, because you don't just coach the kid, you coach the person, and then you get to develop them as an individual and you get to form them as a human first and foremost. And when you see that you have an influence in their life and a positive influence, it's kind of a rewarding moment. And then and that to me was what got me hooked. You know, because I went to 3 World Cups as a youth World Cups, you know, as a assistant coach with Canada, and I think years 2003, 5, and 7, so 3 in a row. And to see those young kids play in those environments and be part of it and help qualify those types of games, it was a really interesting moment. And then I wanted to kick on and do it. So that's why I ended up finishing my pro license in Scotland. And then coaching in Toronto FC and San Jose Earthquakes, and now the Whitecaps, not with the first in Whitecaps with development team, but it's been a good run, been a fun run.
Yeah, definitely has. I was going to mention that, but the position you're in at the moment, I mean, how much are you enjoying that? And it's under 23s, is that correct that you're taking at the moment?
They call it an under-23 squad. I just refer to the development team. It's like a reserve team, basically, if you want, for less. It's the best word to describe it. But we're very young. That's why I took the U-23 tag off myself, because we're basically an under-20 team. And so when you go play some other, just to protect the kids a bit, to say, look, these kids are basically between, you know, 16 and 19. So we have, right now, we have 6 kids that part of my team, our group, that are now playing Brazil today in the World Cup, first game in the FIFA World Cup. We have a goalkeeper from our group that we sold to Leicester City. We have one player that got a professional contract. We have another player that came back down that we got minutes that he's now playing. He had a lot of minutes in the season. So the team that we had, you know, we figured we did a good job with the players. And so we're proud of the achievement. We don't play in a league, which is always an interesting situation, but we've made the best of it. We do trips abroad. We've been to Korea, England this year, Mexico twice, play some local games. So it's an interesting, like I said, situation that players find themselves in, but they have developed. They really have. And then a lot of them do spend training, end up training with the first team off and on. So it's been good.
Yeah, fantastic. And I was going to ask as well, if, in terms of your own career as well, Nick, do you have any aspirations to maybe come back to Scotland or the UK and coach and manage?
Yeah, I mean, going back, I don't know who got, I think it might have been when Lomas was getting the job back in the day. I think at that point I might have been a little bit, I think I talked to somebody here, if there's any interest, you know, give me a call. But knowing what I know now, it probably would have been a really poor decision because at that time, you're still very green. Now that I've been around the block a bit, you know, obviously you have all the licenses, which makes you, you know, you can do that job. But not just that, but going through the all the sort of different travels and different types of coaching and different types of mentorships that I've had, now you feel it, and particularly at 50, you feel more prepared than ever. And saying that, you know, going back is it would be a, I think it'd be a really interesting one, but I know how cutthroat it is over there in Europe that, you know, we always say you're three games away from losing your job, so it's just part of the job. But it'd be interesting to see if there would ever be any interest in to go across and to try to go and do a job. I know a lot of people said, oh, you've been out of the game so long, but yeah, you watch enough football, and I always think that that's not really a reason to not get a job if you haven't been involved in that environment kind of thing. But it'd be interesting to see if there's anything there one day, but that one day has got to come pretty soon before, because I'm getting old.
And finally, Nick, before we go, you mentioned that your toughest opponent you played with, but in terms of you played with a good number of players, in terms of the best player you played with, if you could choose one, who would that be?
I think if you look at the team I played with in Dinamo, I played one game for Dinamo in 1 year, and that was a Yugoslavian at the time cup game. So I didn't really play a lot with. Actually, I played with Boban a lot because he got suspended from FIFA for six or eight months or something. I don't know what it was. So because of his suspension, he was allowed to play with our reserve team, which was where I played all my football basically. He's the best I've ever played around, I would say. But in terms of where I played the most, and I could use St. John's as a reference, I would say probably Paul Kane was the best player I played with.
Yeah, he was good
at that time. I played in the middle of the park with him. He was a fantastic passer. You know, I remember Paul Sturrock having a laugh saying he's got the two slowest central midfielders in the league. but I think we did okay, the two of us. But he's probably the best player to play. Him and then John O'Neill, I think another one, was the one that was really, for whatever reason, didn't get a lot of the recognition he should have got. But he was a fantastic footballer. But if I had to pick one, Paul Kane, and I know he's not, didn't play with me. The other one was Alan Main. He was an incredible goalkeeper. And he didn't get enough credit, I don't think. And he came in a time when there were some decent Scottish goalkeepers as well. So it's difficult for him to get a chance to play in that first team. But it was, I would say, again, going back, if I had to pick one, it'd probably be Paul Kane.
Yeah, he scored a few goals as well from midfield, Paul Kane. He was a good player.
What I remember Paul Kane was as well was I remember playing at Aberdeen, and it was during our time of that good run. And I remember somebody taking Kano out, and the ref, you know, didn't say much about it. And Kano just looked up and he said, I'll never forget. I can't remember who the player was, but he says, I'll see you in 5 minutes, big man. And in 5 to 10 minutes, I looked across, and that guy was lying on the ground, bleeding from his mouth. So that was Paul Kane in a nutshell. He could play football, he could pass it, but he could get stuck in if he had to too. That was what I loved about him.
Yeah, that's a Scottish football in a nutshell there.
Exactly.
Excellent stuff, Nick. That will do us there. Thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good one, and good luck to everything out there.
Well, that was episode 17 of the Talking Football Podcast with Nick Dazovic. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Remember, you can catch any you've missed on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and at DerekClarkSport.co.uk. We're on Twitter at @talking_football, as well as Facebook. I hope you can join me again next week when I'll be speaking to a larger-than-life Scottish goalie. Until then, bye for now.